Chapter 59.
What's happening?
Asked Amanda Hurst. She had her hands cupped around a mug of hot, sweet tea.
Where's Marty? Is he all right?
They were sitting in the officer's mess in Wellington Barracks. Amanda was remarkably composed considering what she had been through. Her daughter was sitting on a sofa playing with an iPad that the Major had found for her.
We're looking for him, said Gannon.
Amanda, can you talk me through what happened to you? She took a sip of tea.
I was at home with Sophie. They must have gotten into the house somehow. It was in the afternoon and Sophie had just got back from school. They knocked me out with something. A stun gun, maybe.
She rubbed her neck.
My neck still hurts. They put me in the boot of a car with Sophie.
She looked over at her daughter, who was engrossed in the iPad.
Who does that to a kid? What sort of animals are they?
That's what we're trying to find out, said Gannon. Okay. So, at some point, they let you talk to Marty, right?
Her eyes narrowed.
How do you know that?
She asked.
They took you for a reason, said Gannon. I'm assuming it was to put pressure on your husband.
She nodded. They took the bag off my head and gave me a phone, and it was Marty. He asked me if I was okay, and I told him what had happened, and then they took the phone off me, and one of the men spoke to him. Something about if Marty did as he was told, we would be all right.
She looked at the Major, and her lower lip trembled. What do they want Marty to do?
Something he wouldn't normally consider doing, said the Major.
Is he in trouble?
Gannon didn't want to lie to her, but he didn't want to upset her either. Her husband was in a whole lot of trouble. He forced a smile.
We're going to do what we can to help him, Amanda,
he said.
I want to go home, she said.
The Major nodded.
I'll arrange for someone to drive you back to Hereford, and they'll stay with you until this is over.
She frowned over her mug of tea.
What do you mean, over?
Gannon was finding it harder to smile, but he made the effort.
When we get him back to you, he said, and that should be a lot easier now you're safe.
He stood up.
I've asked them to bring you some sandwiches and biscuits. I'll come back and see you once we've got transport fixed up.
She reached up and grabbed his hand.
Don't let anything happen to Marty, please. He's a good man. If he's done something wrong, it's because he was trying to save us, that's all. He was being a good husband and a good father.
I know,
said Gannon. She tightened her grip on his hands.
Promise, you'll bring him back to us.
Gannon looked down at her. The pleading in her eyes made his stomach turn over.
I promise, he said.
He left the room and walked down the corridor to where they were holding the American. They had untied Zach's hands, given him a mug of coffee, and put him in a windowless storage room. Wheeler and Travis stood guard outside the door, and they nodded as the Major walked up.
How's he been?
Asked Gannon.
As good as gold, said Wheeler.
The Major opened the door. Zach was sitting in the far corner of the room. He scrambled to his feet, leaving his coffee on the floor.
Am I out of here?
He asked.
MI5 want to debrief you first, then they'll work out what happens to you, said Gannon.
No one knows I'm here, right?
The police think that everyone in the house was killed in an SAS operation. That's the story that will be given to the media.
Thank you, said Zach. I'm sorry about what happened.
Holding a gun to the head of an innocent woman and threatening to kill her in front of her daughter? Yeah, you should be sorry.
It wasn't personal. It was a job.
So tell me, how does someone from Delta, the best of the best, end up threatening to kill a civilian in front of her child? How does that happen, Zach?
The American looked down at the floor, his cheeks flaring red.
You wouldn't understand,
he mumbled.
Look me in the eye like a man's son and tell me.
Zach looked up. He straightened his spine and pulled his shoulders back.
I made some bad choices,
he said, his voice stronger now.
I'd say so, said the Major.
I left Delta 2 years ago. I'd been promised a job with a civilian contractor, but that fell through. Seems the company had been playing fast and loose with its taxes. I was looking for work for a few months, then I got approached by another former Delta guy. It was security work, he said, guarding shipments from Mexico.
Drugs.
I didn't ask and they didn't tell, but sure, yeah, of course. We worked in Mexico, riding shotgun on trucks heading to the border. And we worked in the States, guarding trucks as they drove through Texas and beyond. It was good money, easy work. We had a few attempted hijacks, but we were well-equipped and well-trained, and we never lost a shipment. It's a hell of a jump from protecting trucks to taking a civilian hostage. Zack nodded. They pull you in, bit by bit. We started as defensive security, but before long they wanted us to be more proactive. We were tasked with attacking the opposition.
He shrugged.
It was difficult to say no.
Did you try?
Zack looked pained. The people we were working for don't take no for an answer. And to be honest, we were taking out trash. You've heard about the Mexican cartels, right? They kill and torture each other and their families. They murder cops. They assassinate judges.
What about you? Did you kill cops?
No, said Zack quickly. Absolutely not.
But what if you'd been asked to? Would no have been an answer then?
His eyes flashed dire. I'm not a cop killer.
The major shrugged. So tell me about Marty Hurst.
Tell you what?
You kidnapped his wife and daughter and threatened to kill them.
We wouldn't have actually killed them.
You looked pretty serious in the bedroom a couple of hours ago.
I was just looking for a way out.
Gannon nodded, not convinced. Who's giving you instructions?
A guy called Javier.
Mexican?
Zack nodded. One of Martinez's right-hand men.
Martinez?
Carlos Martinez. He runs the cartel. He lives in a near fortress outside Mexico City. He has guys like Javier do his dirty work for him. We flew over in a private jet.
Who's we?
About a dozen guys.
All former Delta.
A mixture. But yeah, special forces.
You say about a dozen. How many exactly?
Zack frowned as he considered the question. Then he nodded. 13? Someone made a joke about it being unlucky.
And your brief was what?
To do whatever Javier told us.
The major's eyes hardened. He didn't know if the American was being deliberately evasive, but there wasn't time to mess around. Specifically,
Javier met us at the airport. We were split into two groups. Javier spoke to the group separately. That was always his thing, to not let the left hand know what the right hand was doing.
He bent down and picked up his coffee mug. It was displacement behavior, Gannon figured, a clear sign that the American was uneasy with the line of questioning.
Me and three others were tasked with picking up Mrs. Hurst.
So you don't know what the other group was doing? Zack shook his head.
The major studied him for several seconds, wondering if Zack really didn't know that his colleagues had gone into the house in Wimbledon and brutally murdered 7 innocent men and women, and that Marty Hurst had led them. And if Zack had been tasked with the Wimbledon murders, would he have refused, knowing what refusal would entail?
So Javier told you what? To go and get Mrs. Hurst and her daughter and take them to the house in Ealing?
Zack nodded. Exactly.
And at some point, you had Mrs. Hurst speak to her husband.
Zack nodded again. Javier gave us the number. We're to have her speak to him and tell him what happened. Then I took the phone from her and told him that if he didn't do what Javier was asking, he'd never see his wife or daughter again.
He grimaced.
I wouldn't have killed them, I swear. It was a threat.
A threat that Marty took very seriously.
He was one of yours, right? SAS?
Did Javier tell you that?
He said that Hurst was a Brit and that they needed a Brit to lead the team, to make things easier. We were all Americans. He needed someone on the ground and didn't have time to bring in someone new.
Marty had worked for them before.
No, but they knew him.
How exactly? How did Javier have Marty's name?
They'd crossed paths in Colombia a few years ago.
The major's eyes narrowed. In what way exactly?
I'm not sure. He didn't say. He just gave me the address and told me to take the wife and daughter and have the wife speak to the husband on the phone.
So the plan was to force Marty to work for Javier.
I got the impression that Marty had already done some work for him in London, but he was getting cold feet.
Because of what Javier was asking him to do?
Zack nodded. That's what they're like, the Mexicans. They make you do what they want, one way or another.
How did you contact Javier? While you were in Ealing?
I didn't. He rang me, usually landlines.
You don't have a mobile number for him?
Zack shook his head. He wanted to keep minimal contact.
You didn't call him to confirm that you had Mrs. Hurst and that she had spoken to her husband?
He called me, once to confirm that we had her and again to confirm that she had contacted her husband.
Landlines both times?
Zack nodded. He leaned forward. So what's going to happen now?
To you? MI5 will need a chat. Then I assume they'll pass you on to the DEA.
I'm guessing the intel you have will be useful, and that being the case, they'll debrief you and arrange for witness protection for you and your family.
Zack transferred his coffee mug to his left hand and offered his right.
Thank you,
he said. The major shook his hand, but he felt nothing but contempt for the man. He wasn't generally a fan of American Special Forces. All U.S. Special Forces personnel, more than 70,000 of them, came under the U.S. Special Operations Command, and they included Navy SEALs, Delta Force, Army Rangers, and Green Berets. The major doubted that 1 in 100 would have been up to the SAS's demanding standards. But leaving that aside, he had a problem sympathizing with any former Special Forces soldier who sold his skills to criminal gangs. Mercenaries were one thing. A professional soldier carrying out his duties against armed forces had at least a degree of respectability. But killing for drug dealers was just plain wrong. And taking women and children hostage and threatening to kill them was what thugs and villains did, not highly trained soldiers. When Gannon had burst into the bedroom in Ealing, he had no doubt at all that Zack was ready and willing to pull the trigger and end Mrs. Hurst's life.
Thank you,
Zack said again. The major pulled his hand away and resisted the urge to wipe it on his trousers.
No problem, he said. MI5 should be on the way. Let the guys outside know if you need to use the bathroom.
The major left the room. Two middle-aged men in dark suits were waiting in the corridor.
Speak of the devil, he said. I'm sorry, said the older of the two, his grey hair swept back as if he hoped that would disguise his bald patch.
You're from Pritchard?
The man nodded.
We're here to collect... Actually, we don't have a name.
Zack. I don't have a family name.
Do you have armed support?
Good God, no.
Do you think we need it?
The major's eyes widened.
What did Pritchard say?
We were just told to collect the person you'd removed from the house in Ealing.
Okay, just so you know, the man in there is prepared to provide intelligence about a major Mexican drugs cartel. The same cartel that killed 7 of your people this morning. If the cartel even has an inkling that you have him, they will bring the wrath of hell down on you. So yes, I would think that armed support would be a good idea.
The two men looked at each other in astonishment. It was clear that they had been badly briefed, to say the least.
Look, he said, gesturing at Travis and Wheeler. These two guys are cleared for weapons carry in London. They can ride with you.
Thank you, said the grey-haired officer. Much appreciated.